Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter here at KUNM. There's an election coming up in Albuquerque for mayor and city council seats, and crime is the number one issue on voters' minds this campaign season. The rates of both violent crime and property crime are spiking here and around New Mexico. And for the eight candidates running for mayor, it's become the focus of their debates and speeches. Most are talking about hiring a new police chief and more officers on the force. But crime is always dead center in campaign rhetoric, and politicians have been calling for tougher penalties for decades. Do they work? What causes crime in Albuquerque and in New Mexico? Do you think education, poverty, and trauma play a role in our high crime rates? Do you think the lack of behavioral health and addiction treatment are a factor? And do you feel safe here? We'll get into all of this and more over the course of this hour. Join the conversation by calling 277-5866. You can tweet us, too, with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Martine Salazar is a reporter with the Albuquerque Journal who's been covering the election. Thanks for being here with us this morning, Martine.
Happy to be here, Marisa.
Crime is not just at the top of the list for voters. The polling shows it's by far the most important issue here right now.
Absolutely. It's incredible. The Albuquerque Journal conducted a poll recently, and one of the questions we asked was, what is the top issue in this election? And not surprisingly, 69% of likely Albuquerque voters that took part in the poll said it's crime, easily eclipsing lack of jobs and poor economy as the top issue. And then when we further asked how much of a problem is crime in Albuquerque, an overwhelming 99% said it's a very serious problem or a somewhat serious problem, which is a pretty incredible number.
This is always an issue for candidates running for just about any office here, though, and nationally. What makes it different this year?
There are a number of things that make it different. I think first and foremost, you know, absolutely, crime is always on the minds of voters. But in this case, this year, we've got this spike in both violent and property crime that's happening here in Albuquerque. And in years past, I'm thinking, you know, 10 years ago when we had a spike or in the 90s when we had a spike, we were following a national trend. And at this point, Albuquerque is seeing a significant increase in crime, whereas other large cities in the country are not experiencing that same spike.
So that means that we're kind of alone in this surge of crime activity here.
Not quite alone. We have places like Chicago where the murder rate is off the charts, but vast majority of cities aren't experiencing the spikes that we are experiencing.
But still, this year the crime rate is lower than it was in the late 90s here in Albuquerque.
Correct. I think it peaked in the 90s, in the early 90s. But again, we've got several issues going on here. We've got the Department of Justice that's entered into a settlement agreement with the Albuquerque Police Department over allegations of excessive force. We've got a change in the way that judges are handling bail for people who have been arrested for crimes. And we've got a shortage of police officers, a pretty significant shortage of police officers. And so all these are combining, and I think that's why it's front and center in voters' minds in this election.
So you've been following the race closely for the Journal, and you've seen the mayoral candidates speak about this quite a bit, I imagine. Are they offering practical solutions, or is it more of kind of a big philosophical approach that they're talking about?
They're talking about both. On the one hand, they all are talking about what they would do to increase the number of police officers. But they're also talking about things like behavioral health issues and the, you know, the reasons behind a lot of the crime that we see here, and what can be done to start chipping away at those problems to, you know, eventually lower the crime problem.
So there are 8 candidates in the race. Do you think they'll have a hard time distinguishing themselves from one another when it comes to talking about crime?
I think for most voters, they probably have, you know, 2 or 3 candidates in mind who they're considering. And so I think in that light, voters will be able to distinguish Dan Lewis's crime plan from Tim Keller's crime plan.
All right. So early voting has already begun, and Election Day is Tuesday, October 3rd in Albuquerque. We've got some graphs on KUNM.org right now mapping crime here over time. So check that out. Businesses say crime in Albuquerque is a problem for them and for the economy. But does the poor economy generate crime? What do you think causes crime? Join the conversation this morning by calling 277-5866 or toll free at 877-899-5866. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. We've got Rachel Sams, the editor-in-chief of Albuquerque Business First, on the line. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Marisa. Thanks for having me.
Businesses in Albuquerque and especially downtown have told Mayor Richard Berry that they're concerned about the safety of their employees and that they're going to leave town if something doesn't change. How does this affect the city's economy?
So it's a really big effect on the city's economy. We've been hearing from business people for years that their biggest worry is the economy. I had pretty much been hearing that ever since I moved to New Mexico in 2009. And in the past year, crime has really taken center stage in what we hear from our readers who are business owners and executives that they are the most worried about. You've seen the Greater Albuquerque Chamber make public safety one of their top 3 issues. And sometimes business people have different concerns than the general public, but after hearing Martine talk about the journal poll out this morning, you can see that at this moment in Albuquerque, business leaders' concerns and the general public's concerns are very similar, with crime top of mind. So our readers say that crime affects business in a number of ways. One question, depending on where a business is located, will their business be safe for customers? Will customers feel safe coming in? In turn, will that affect their sales? You also alluded to another concern that a lot of businesses have about crime at their location. Will their business be safe for employees? Can they keep their employees? Can they retain the employees that they have? That was a big concern expressed earlier this year by LaVou, a tech company that wrote a letter to the mayor and governor with its concerns about crime downtown where it's located. And also, there's just personal concerns. If you're recruiting a business or an employee to Albuquerque, that person might be concerned about the safety of themselves, their family, their kids, and that might impact their willingness to start a business here, join a business here, or stay with a business here.
Is this just a downtown issue, Rachel? Are you hearing from business owners and workers in other parts of the city?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You hear a lot about downtown, the LaVou situation that I just mentioned. They're located downtown. But it's definitely not just downtown where businesses face issues with crime and where we're hearing our readers speak out about it. The folks at Rebel Donut told us last year that their storefront in the Northeast Heights had been shot at and their tip jar had been stolen from. We actually looked at some city data on retail crime last year, and we found that a number of the top spots for retail crime were not downtown. At that time, when we looked at this data, the highest level of property crime was at Uptown, where there's a large concentration of retail stores. So this potentially impacts businesses all over the city.
So it's not just a one-way street, though, right, Rachel? Crime impacts the economy, but does the state of the economy also affect crime rates?
That's a really interesting question, and a lot of people, a lot of organizations locally and nationally have looked at that, and most people do feel that there is a correlation, but there's not a lot of definite findings on what that correlation is. For example, there was a report in CityLab a few years back that delved into this. And that report found that criminologists will often tell you that poor economy increases crime because someone facing money issues, that might prompt crime. While on the other hand, economists might tell you that a good economy is more likely to increase crime because more people are buying fancier cars and clothes and jewelry, maybe showing off some things that people might want to steal. But CityLab looked at a lot of different studies, and they didn't find a direct correlation. When you talk with people who work in these fields, they definitely see, on an anecdotal level, a correlation between the state of the economy, the availability of jobs, and crime. And certainly, you know, we talked a little bit about how Albuquerque has been outside the overall national trend with crime increasing. It's been the same with unemployment as well. New Mexico's had one of the highest unemployment rates in the country recently. The national unemployment rate is 4.4%. New Mexico's was 6.3% in August. And in the Albuquerque metro area, the preliminary unemployment rate for August was 6.1%. So we are seeing that trend as well.
All right. Hang with us on the line, Rachel. I want to take a call from Jared in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I work in the local, I work with a local security company that's been in Albuquerque since 1949. I've lived in Albuquerque for 5 years. I've been in the industry for over 10 years. And I've actually worked in a lot of cities and states throughout the United States. And in my 10-year career, Albuquerque is by far the worst city that I've ever actually worked in when it comes to property crime. And a lot of this spans, and to be honest with you, I've actually myself witnessed a shooting in person right in front of my face here in the city. Not even within this year, I actually was an eyewitness to a shooting. I deal with business owners all day long who have had multiple break-ins, vehicles crashed through their storefronts. I've been with people who have had so many things happen to them that a lot of the stuff doesn't even get reported because there's not an investigation process in our city. It's not like we have a team of detectives out there, you know, ready to tackle the property crime and investigate this. It's basically right now, it's just cataloging evidence and getting lucky here and there and getting some breaks. But the biggest thing that I'm seeing out here is...
Jared, I'm sorry. We're kind of losing you. I don't know what's going on with your phone. Thank you so much for giving us a call. Martine, what do you know about what Rachel's been saying? Have candidates been talking about the relationship between crime rates and the economy?
Absolutely. They are essentially saying until the city fixes its crime problem, it's not going to improve its economy. And so I believe if not all of them are saying that, the vast majority of them are making that argument.
Rachel, there's also concerned that the crime rates will convince businesses not to come here. Is that something national companies consider?
Definitely. I think that any business that's looking to relocate or expand to a new city, they're going to be looking at a lot of data about that market, everything from crime rates to the state of education in that area. So it certainly is something that businesses look at. I think that's one of the reasons that you've seen organizations like the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce really start talking openly about issues with crime and making public safety a top issue.
Well, thank you, Rachel Sams, Editor-in-Chief of Albuquerque Business First. We're going to take a call now from Sarah in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah. All right, maybe we lost Sarah. We're talking about Albuquerque's election and the number one issue on voters' minds, crime. And it's not only a problem in this city. New Mexico had the second highest property crime rate in 2015 and the third highest violent crime rate in the country, according to the FBI. How safe do you feel wherever you are in the state? What's your community doing to combat crime? Give us a call at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to take a quick break.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
KUNM program support provided by not-for-profit Presbyterian Healthcare Services, serving New Mexico and building trust for more than 100 years. More information about Presbyterian and the services they provide at phs.org.
It's delicate, but with an undercurrent of aggression. It's vivid light and creeping shadow. It's a look back and the very definition of avant-garde. Beethoven's Symphony No. 4, music of glorious contradictions, on the way from a concert just outside Washington, D.C., on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Representative Mo Maestas is here with us today. He's the co-chair of the Criminal Justice Reform Subcommittee. Good morning, Representative Maestas.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Politicians are usually calling for tougher penalties for criminals. When it comes to dropping the crime rate, do tougher penalties work?
Tougher penalties work for that particular person suffering the tougher penalties, but no, they do not affect crime rates whatsoever. It's much more complicated than that. I agree that some of the penalties need to be raised, but they have to be consistent relative to other penalties. So we have a lot of work to do in Santa Fe with regards to that. But the impulse to raise penalties is what we do in Santa Fe. You know, there's at least 50 bills each year to raise penalties. But what we really need to do is dive deeper into the criminal justice system. We get the criminal justice system we pay for, bottom line. Mm-hmm. So we have to fully fund the criminal justice institutions, particularly in Albuquerque, because the Albuquerque legislators do not control the budget in Santa Fe. And Albuquerque gets outvoted many, many times by the rural representatives. So we need to fully fund the local DA's office. It's essentially a $25 million operation with a $19 million budget. Mm-hmm. We need to fully fund Metro Court, District Court, and the Public Defender Department, because if the Public Defender Department does not have its resources, cases get continued and justice is not served. We need swift and certain justice, and we have to pay for it.
So locally and nationally, criminal justice reform and police reform are often pitted against public safety. Do we have to choose between reform and safer communities?
Absolutely not. In fact, they're consistent. Criminal justice reform simply looks at the criminal justice system and makes it better and tweaks the system to make it more efficient. That's in our interest, particularly as it relates to recidivism, to confront the high recidivism rates, you know, people leaving prison and going back. That's a public safety issue. If we can lower recidivism from, you know, whatever, 60% down to 30, then crime will go down. So it's in all of our interest to really adopt some of these criminal justice proposals.
You're a former prosecutor and now you practice criminal defense. You've also been working on this subcommittee for years. What's the top priority for changing things here? The stuff that's not necessarily going to read well on the campaign trail down the road?
Well, like I said, we have to fully fund the system. And it's unfortunate that our mayor back in 09 and our governor in 2010 came to power during a no tax pledge, anti-government era, anti-immigrant era. And so that's unfortunate because we don't have our economy simply hasn't grown. I would submit that it hasn't grown because the government hasn't participated in growing it. But that's a topic for another day. But what we really need to do is look at these systems and make it more efficient. For example, probation officials should have, by national standards, about 70, 80 probationers on their plate. They have about 120, 130. So how do we do that? Either two choices. Either A, we spend money for more probation officers, which isn't going to happen, or we lower their caseload. For example, There was a bill that passed both houses, practically unanimous, that was vetoed, that if a probationer goes 3 years with zero violations, they would then go to unsupervised probation. So that they're still under the weight of government if they get arrested, but the probation officer can then focus on those 20 or 30 or 40 probationers that have a higher potential for recidivism and increase public safety that way.
You're also talking about in the Criminal Justice Reform Subcommittee rewriting the criminal code and making it so that judges have more discretion when it comes to sentencing. Is that right?
Yes. There's a national movement against mandatory sentencing. You know, if you commit this crime with this record, you do this much time. Kind of a bureaucratic flow chart of sentencing as opposed to a more thoughtful, individualized sentencing structure. So, yeah, and the legislature in Santa Fe is moving away from mandatory sentencing to give judges more discretion. But with regards to the criminal code, we really need to rewrite it so that the penalty scheme is consistent. For example, possession of narcotics over a certain point is charged as trafficking. You face 9 years prison for a trafficking charge. You face 3 years prison for an aggravated battery with a deadly weapons charge. That doesn't jive. And so we need to make a violent crime a priority. We need to increase penalties on violent crime while simultaneously lower penalties on nonviolent crime so that the criminal justice system can then focus on violent criminals and making sure that they're successfully prosecuted.
So police, the DA, bail bondsmen say a lot of the changes we've had in the courts lately with making trials happen more quickly and with bail reform, that's part of the problem. That's what makes it so that criminals end up right back out on the street. Do you think more judicial discretion in sentencing could make the problem worse?
No, that's a great question because the Supreme Court is committed to its interpretation of the Constitution and the rules. And so the pretrial release rule that came out July 1st is creating a lot of havoc. The Supremes are committed to it. And theoretically, it could work, but we need the resources to get it done. And then, of course, you have the case management rule, which is only applied to Bernalillo County, that puts hard, fast deadlines on the prosecutors. But with APD being 200 cops down and the DA's office being horribly understaffed, the system simply is not meeting those deadlines. So it's creating a lot of problems. But with regards to judicial discretion, each violent crime is so individualized. It's personal to the victim. It's dependent on the circumstances and the defendant. And so bureaucratic rules like three strikes will only diminish the justice that can be handed out when you look at a particular person and a particular victim and give someone their just penalties for their crime.
All right. We got a bunch of calls coming in. We're going to take one from Tom in Raton. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I just want to remind everybody of the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. We have continually talked about being tough on crime, and that doesn't work. We spend more money on building new jails and prisons than we do funding education. And I think that that's a huge problem. And I think the other thing that we see from politicians is they talk about, well, let's get more police on the streets. Not necessarily a bad idea, but let's talk about the kind of policing that's being done. I was a city council member in a town that I came from out of Oklahoma, and what we did when we put more police and fire on the streets is we put very strict guidelines on community programming, community policing programming, that really helped us out. And getting the people involved in this community by having a police force that's not adversarial to them is important.
Well, thank you so much for your call today, Tom in Raton. We're going to go to Tom in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. So I'm going to be really brief. First, I think crucially in the mayoral election,
mm-hmm.
we need a proven administrator, which is why I'm supporting Tim Keller, and that will help with the police department. I want to tell a very short story about how dangerous it is in Albuquerque. I have a friend, Keith, who's a middle school teacher, trained martial artist. He's a licensed gun carrier. He has one by his right hand in his car. in the last month, just east of UNM in South Loma. It's a very nice neighborhood. At 10 in the morning on a weekday, car pulled up next to him, guy pointed the gun at him, his head, and said, "Give us everything you have." He thought about, can I shoot him? Can I defend myself? But there was someone in the back seat. He said he could have had an automatic weapon. So he said, sure, all I have is my billfold. And they took it and left. That didn't get reported on the news. That's not been followed up by the police department because there's no one to do it. So it is dangerous here. And until we have a good mayor and a good governor and the funding, the last two callers went over almost everything that's wrong. We need the funding. We need people who are going to fund government and are capable of running it. And we definitely need more police on the street. And that's it. I'll be short.
Thanks for sharing that story with us today, Tom. We're going to go to Joan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joan.
Hello. I'm just talking about the correlation between poverty and crime. And it's clear to me that if over 90% of the criminal defendants qualify for public defender representation, it's obvious that we have that correlation. I think if we don't improve the economy, we're not going to improve the crime rate. So many people in the jail at MDC have so many psychological problems, drug addiction, alcoholism, psychological problems, histories of being beaten as children. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thanks for your call today, Joan. What do you think of what Joan is saying about the relationship between crime and poverty and trauma, Representative Maestas?
No, thank you, Joan. I agree 100%. I'm actually surprised. Hi, Rachel. That the business first does not see a correlation between crime and poverty. There's a direct correlation. We're in a 9-year economic recession. There's not a behavioral health infrastructure to speak of. Where do you go if you're a heroin addict or struggling with meth addiction? So we have a lot of issues we need to address. And criminals didn't come here from another planet. They grew up in this town. So that's why I'm a big advocate of early childhood development and things of that nature. We can put a lot of resources on the front end that would save us tremendous money on the back end. We just need to find the political will.
We want to hear from you today, too. What do you think fights crime? Would more officers on the streets help? A new chief of police? More funding for prosecutors and courts? What do you make of these criminal justice reform efforts? Call now 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. Representative Maestas, you say that in reality, witnesses fight crime. How important is it for people to feel like they can turn to the police for help or go to police with information?
No, thank you. That's a great question. Many people think of the criminal justice system as an arrest and jail. It's really a prosecution and prison. You know, you need the resources to convict somebody. That's why the toughening penalties in Santa Fe only work if you get a conviction. Violent crimes are very labor intensive to prosecute, particularly if they're a year or 2 years down the road. The victim may need services. The victim may move, be disinterested, be afraid, be intimidated by the system or the defendant. So there needs to be a lot of resources put into prosecuting violent crimes. That's why drug crimes are so easy to prosecute. You just need one cop. It takes about an hour. Violent crime is maybe a 2-day trial that's a year or 2 years down the road. So we really need to put in the time, the resources, and get services for victims, particularly domestic violence victims, so that their families can be made whole in addition to prosecuting the defendant.
Natalie Nicotine is from the Native American Voters Alliance, which has been working with APD Forward, a coalition of organizations that's been pushing for reform of the Albuquerque Police Department for years. Good morning, Natalie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Natalie, folks are talking about solving crime, about cracking down on criminals, about putting more police on the street. You've been working on APD reform a long time. What comes into your mind when you hear that strategy?
I get a little frustrated, you know, because I think these are some great solutions, but single-handedly, they are solutions that, you know, just put a Band-Aid on the situation, and they're very short-term solutions. For me as a social worker, you know, I have to look at things from a broader perspective and how, just New Mexico, we all understand that we are impacted by so many socioeconomic factors, and those are associated directly with higher crime rates. And so, you know, there's this feeling of the community and people who are concerned about public safety feeling a sense of powerlessness and helplessness. And, you know, the easier answer for most New Mexicans is a strong stance on harsher punishments. And as we can see, you know, this has further harmed our communities, and this does not work. So, you know, the reality is a lot of these socioeconomic factors are tied to high crime, but instead of pushing for harsher punishments, you know, we really need to look critically at how these factors can be alleviated in a way that lowers our crime rates and increases public safety. So I do appreciate the comments made from Tom earlier, from Raton. And, you know, education can play a huge factor in reducing crime and increasing public safety. And there definitely is a connection between high crime and the low rate of our graduation rates here in New Mexico. So in terms of public safety and lowering the crime, I think that definitely can be done simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, too, as you were talking, I was thinking about how part of the thing is that, you know, tougher penalties are something you can do right now, right? Like, you can pass a bill in the legislature and you get those tougher penalties on the books and you can say we got tougher penalties and we did something this year about this issue. Whereas when we're talking about these bigger systemic issues, right, like education and opportunity and trauma and lack of behavioral health services, these are like really big long-term problems. Mm-hmm. And maybe part of the challenge is figuring out how to tackle some of these problems that don't have that sort of faster one legislative session solution, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there are those solutions that do make sense, right? Like, we do need to invest in our education, you know, our public education for our children. We do need to tend to our behavioral health crisis here in New Mexico. And, you know, in a place like New Mexico that is known for high poverty, unemployment, you know, our poor economy, you know, like, we can really look at each of those factors and make some real pushes for some effective reforms rather than, you know, just doing the quick fix of, you know, harsher punishments.
But how do you convince people? Like, we've had callers who have called in and said, you know, this crazy thing happened. I've experienced crime. How do you convince people who have had a problem very recently that may have been traumatic that part of the solution is kicking more dollars to education?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, as a social worker, you know, the biggest thing would be community engagement, you know, really having those players at the table who do advocate for those vulnerable communities and also engaging the community, educating them through the process, understanding, you know, what are those structures that are perpetuating these systems, you know, and really giving them some different information to really get involved and to be able to share their voices so that they can create change in their communities. So,
all right, we're going to take a call from Sarah in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, am I on?
You're on.
Oh, okay. The first time I pressed the mute button by accident.
Oh, so, that's okay.
You can hear me now.
We got you.
Okay. Yes. You know what? So there is a big interest in this mayoral election, which is very good. But why do people wait until the crimes, the robbery, the auto theft becomes such a big problem? And then they're going to care about who the mayor is. So, you know, people could care less if it's not bad, but they're willing to do something when it gets really, really bad. And we're, what is it, number one for highest child poverty now, or number one? Yeah, 36% of the children under five are living in poverty. And it, like, we all know that this has a lot this has everything to do with our crime rate. All the businesses, everybody's leaving. I think 70, 80,000 people have left our state. None of the big businesses want to come here. So it's a problem, but I'm glad what people that want to live here that are going to stay here, like myself, that we're going to care. And so if you call 311, they'll give you all the 12 polling locations. That's all you got to remember is call 311.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so you don't have to go to a website. You know, all the this is a city election,
yep.
So you could ask them for all the locations. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Sarah. We'll take a call from Tiska in Albuquerque. Good morning, Tiska.
Am I on?
You're on.
Okay. Well, I'm listening to this, and I'm going to be a little repetitive on some of the issues. Until we, as a society, as a community, start to show our kids that we really do care about them, starting with home visits for pregnant moms and early support in education, in school money, we are going to just continue to escalate police and expenses because we're trying to contain a population that we basically have been abusing by not caring about them. And children get it. If we're not putting money into them, their education, whatever activities are available for them, they're going to steal. They're going to commit crimes. They're aimless. They don't have the love. They don't have support. So until we learn to really look at the big problem, we're just going to keep paying for the symptoms. We really need to address and support our children. It's crazy. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiska. We're talking about crime and the election in Albuquerque that's coming up. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Cars can stand for a whole lot more than just a way to get somewhere. They're our first taste of independence. They carry lots of memories. Even after we can't drive anymore, we may hold on to them as a way of, well, holding on. So when you decide to donate your car to KUNM, we know what a special gift you're giving. We are truly honored that you chose us. To donate your car, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The University of New Mexico is home to a 40-foot totem pole that was stolen from a Canadian First Nation in 1941. Years later, the university came to terms with its past mistakes and worked out an agreement with the tribe. That's one story, and there are more. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we discuss museums mending relationships with tribes.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and today we're talking about the high rates of property crime and violent crime in Albuquerque and in New Mexico. Have you experienced a crime recently? Maybe your car got stolen or your house got broken into. Did it make you want to leave town? What do you think needs to change to stop this kind of thing from happening? Call us at 277-5866 and join the conversation. You can also find us on Facebook and post comments there. We're KUNM Radio. We're going to take a call now from Bernie in Albuquerque. Good morning, Bernie.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Can you hear me? Okay. I just want to make a comment on the judicial system and as a whole. Not just the prisons or the policing, but it starts, for one, the policing, but it goes, but also we got to change that. And then we also, because, I mean, we obviously need more police, but that's not only the answer. It's how we police as well, as one caller said. But also to prosecution, we don't have enough DAs. I mean, assistant DAs, there's just not enough people to prosecute. And then it's the type of laws that are legislated to deal with crimes, because obviously the laws that the way they're set up, they don't make really any sense for deterring crime and or changing people's behavior. And then the prison systems themselves are a huge problem, because I mean they're backwards, because in prison what's good is bad and what's bad is good, instead of using that opportunity when you have somebody incarcerated, instead of just warehousing them, utilizing that time to remodel behavior in a systematic logical manner, in a progressive manner, so that when these individuals get out of prison, that they have an idea of how to act within the boundaries of society, and not a skewed and perverted picture of what happens inside incarceration during their time of incarceration, because it's completely backwards. So they get out and they repeat and or do something even worse, which we've seen over and over again. If we can totally revamp that system, then we're okay. But that's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to take dedication. So it's from the top down. And, of course, we have a larger cultural issue as well that's been going on here in New Mexico for a long time. And it's not only New Mexico. It's around the country. There's a lot of things happening around the country. But it's really prevalent here. And no mental health care exacerbates the whole situation. I mean, we have no mental health care. So our prisons are becoming a mental health ward. And then the mentally ill are just wandering around Albuquerque. They can't take care of themselves. It's insane. But so that's just my comment. I just think it's a holistic issue, not just one thing. Obviously, we know that. But we've really got to think about revamping and restructuring everything else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Bernie. Natalie, I want to go back to you. You're a social worker here. And so in a lot of ways, you're on the front lines of a lot of these issues. And we're hearing people talk about these bigger systemic failures with regards to treatment and with regards to the court system and prosecution. How do you see all of those?
I do see that there are issues that our community faces. You know, recently we did some research with the urban Indian community, and what really came out of that research was, you know, we have individuals who need emergency services, perhaps, you know, it be through APD, but these people are not calling, you know, the police in these situations because of fear of how they might handle it. Mm-hmm. And so they're avoiding those interactions with APD. And, you know, these are people who took leadership roles to serve and protect. And so, you know, there's a culture within that of excessive force. And a lot of people, you know, they don't want to deal with the police. And, you know, this is a huge concern because we have a high population of Native Americans who live here, as well as different minorities. So APD definitely is causing fear in a lot of the community members, and that relationship isn't there. And so that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do with mm-hmm. APD Forward. Because it really is about promoting public safety and really looking at different things that can help create a better relationship with the community. So, you know, at this point, you know, I do encourage, you know, our up-and-coming leaders to reach out to these communities, reach out to all populations and ask them for what they need and work directly with them to create a real plan for transformation. Because a lot of these situations that are coming up, they really are kind of like cries from the community, you know, but are we listening to them? And, you know, it's not enough to have one or two consultants from each of these populations that, you know, they're going to be working with. You know, they really do need to engage with the community, because not just one or two people can speak for all of us. So I am concerned about that, because I also work in line with our youth, and to see that that attitude, you know, kind of perpetuate into the younger generation is also of a concern, because there is no respect there for our leaders who do protect and serve, you know. And I don't think, you know, I don't attribute that to, you know, them being solely like their fault. I think it's just the culture that's, you know, being perpetuated from what their parents or, you know, their extended family are experiencing in the community.
Carl Reynolds is the senior legal and policy advisor for the Council of State Governments Justice Center, which is a national nonprofit that works on lowering crime and recidivism rates and improving public safety. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Marisa.
The council has worked with states and counties around the country to improve public safety. In general, what kinds of things work?
That's a big question. I want to say that the comments that you've received that I've been listening to have been very thoughtful and on the mark in terms of addressing these issues in a variety of ways. The work that we do with states, typically with state policymakers, has to do with getting our hands on all kinds of data within the state to see what's happening in the system. Who is being arrested and how are they progressing through the criminal justice system? As Bernie mentioned, the resources across the system are a big issue. You need to have enough police, enough prosecutors, enough defense lawyers who can do the job that they need to do in the system, the judicial system, corrections, supervision, probation and parole, all those components of the system, behavioral health, huge issue in New Mexico. We help policymakers kind of sort out how that set of systems is interacting and how people are flowing through it and whether the interventions that the state is attempting to use with people are working, whether recidivism can be further reduced, and so forth. Lot of interaction with all the people who work in the criminal justice system, and we can usually figure out some ways that the state can reallocate resources to be as cost-effective as possible. And one of the ways that we see that happening is, somebody mentioned deterrence earlier. Having, big punishments on the books and sending people away to prison for a long time feels good, but it does not necessarily work as a deterrent. One of the things that we see is that the law enforcement presence in the community can be the most effective, the most cost-effective way of achieving some level of deterrence, and that kind of goes to what Natalie was saying about having the trust of the community. When you are hoping that law enforcement will have that impact. At the other end of the spectrum, what works? Bernie mentioned having good programming in prison and good interventions in prison. Yes, you need to have that. But what we see from the research is that the kinds of interventions that have the most impact on recidivism are the kind that are used in community settings when people are under supervision and are getting the right kind of cognitive behavioral interventions that will change the way that they think and respond to their emotions and sort of reparent their brains so that they're more likely to desist from engaging in crime and hurting other people.
So our state is often facing problems with funding, Carl, and that goes for our criminal justice system, obviously. Do we have to spend more money to find solutions?
Well, we don't know the answer to that yet. I mean, I know that New Mexico is not a rich state and has some real deficits in the resources that it provides in this area, and I would not be surprised in other areas. So I don't know the answer to that. I do know that we can sometimes help states kind of think about how that money is being spread across the system and where they can get the most impact, the most bang for the buck. Putting people in prison is sometimes the only answer. It's always a very expensive answer. And, when you're paying for someone's health care and their food and every other need that humans have 24/7, it's just going to be much more expensive than any other form of intervention. So we want to make sure that scarce, precious resource is used in the most effective way possible. And if any savings can be realized from that part of the system, the deep end of the system, you want to reallocate those into the most effective ways upstream, effective law enforcement and effective supervision and behavioral health treatment.
All right. Well, thank you for your time this morning, Carl Reynolds. Katrina Hotram Lopez is the director of the Behavioral Health Initiative for Bernalillo County. Good morning, Katrina. Katrina? All right, we're going to take a call from Ty in Rio Rancho. Good morning, Ty.
You can pay to feed and educate the people. You can pay them a living wage. Or you can pay for more police and jails. either way you pay, and I think some people don't understand. They think if they don't pay for social programs, they'll save that money. But you will have to pay more for police and jail. Either way you pay, but the quality of life will be different.
All right. Thank you. That's Ty in Rio Rancho. Do we have Katrina on the line?
Katrina's here.
Hey, good morning, Katrina.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the legs got kicked out from under our behavioral health system in New Mexico a few years back, and it hasn't really recovered. Do you think that plays a role in our high crime rate?
I think it could play a role in the crime rate. You know, we know that lots of addictions and property crime are most likely linked. But I think, though, really, what the caller said last, I think, was really key. You know, if we pay for some services and we pay for recovery and diversion programs in the community, give people options and give people a way to and an outlet to cover, we're going to have better outcomes in our community as a whole. And that's what this behavioral health initiative is trying to do.
What kind of an impact can the next mayor of Albuquerque have on this problem?
Oh, certainly they're going to have a big impact. So the Behavioral Health Initiative is not just with Bernalillo County. It's also with the City of Albuquerque and the University of New Mexico Hospital, and as well as our community partners. But we have been working jointly together to pool resources, to leverage resources, to make sure that we are providing funding and creating a safety net service. And certainly the city has been a contributor and a partner to that. You know, with our newest initiative for mobile crisis teams, which is a city-county effort with law enforcement to get licensed clinicians to assist law enforcement in responding to behavioral health calls.
All right. Well, thanks for speaking with us this morning, Katrina Hotram-Lopez. We're going to take a quick call from Clifton here at the end of the hour. Good morning, Clifton.
Good morning. Hey, so this is a fun follow-on on the last two calls. Currently in our election, we have the option to vote for the Healthy Workforce Act. And I'd just like to share that that's exactly on point with the previous two comments that if we care about crime in our city, we need to work on the fundamentals. And so I have already voted in behalf of the Healthy Workforce Act as one means of helping keep people whole so that they don't have to fall into crime.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Clifton. We're coming to the end of the hour today. You can find links to all of the mayoral candidates' crime platforms online at KUNM.org. And I know we had a bunch of callers here this morning that we didn't get to. You can comment on our post about this topic at KUNM.org. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Thank you for joining us today on Let's Talk New Mexico. Carl Reynolds from the Council of State Governments Justice Center, Katrina Hotram-Lopez, Director of the Behavioral Health Initiative for Bernalillo County, Rachel Sams of Albuquerque Business First, Martin Salazar from the Albuquerque Journal, Representative Mo Maestas, Natalie Nicotine from the Native American Voters Alliance. Thanks, everyone, for being here this morning. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous shows. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today, Rashad Mahmoud screened your calls, Sarah Trujillo live tweeted the show, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.